This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Missouri Woods and Water Podcast with your hosts, Nate and Micah. Andy couldn't make it tonight. He's off learning about farming equipment.
Combines.
I don't know what you... Yeah, combines. I mean, they pick the corn, they pick the beans. I don't know what else you need to learn.
You got
to
hit this button.
Okay.
You got to hit this button now to let it drive itself instead of this button.
Right. Yeah, I mean...
He is going to kick
they pretty much
he is
drive themselves.
Kick my ass when he hears that.
They, I mean, to be honest, they could probably do it from their couch with the technology today. It's really not a job.
Dude, they're going to have drone. They're going to have drone combines. It's going to happen.
I don't know if it would be called a drone. It'd be called something else.
A robot.
But like, yeah. Yeah. Where you won't even have to sit in the thing and it'll all do it automatically. I foresee that in the next 5 years.
Hey.
I have no need for farmers. I'm kidding.
Can you envision the steam coming out of his ears right now as he's listening to this? which let's be honest, he's probably not.
I feed America, dang it! I feed him. Right, he ain't gonna listen. He's like, I feed America. I'm just kidding. I love all you farmers. It's just a joke. Please continue to listen to us while you're picking my food.
I might need to hit pause. That was hilarious. Please continue to listen to us while you're picking my food.
No, I have a lot of respect for the farmers out there. I just like to give Andy a hard time.
Yeah, that's exactly
but
what
anyways,
it is.
Back to the show. Today, we have Dr. Grant Woods of Growing Deer TV, and you know, he's done a lot of other things. I've been a huge fan of him for a long time now. I said it in the show, but many years ago, I was able to see him in person in a seminar he did here in Oak Grove, actually. And so ever since then, you know, I've kind of watched what he does, and he puts a lot of just awesome information out there. So make sure you guys are following him on his Instagram and Facebook. He's always putting up reels, great informational reels, and that
YouTube.
Sort of thing. Lots of good stuff. Yeah, YouTube.
Growing,
check out his YouTube.
Growing Gear TV, isn't that his thing?
Yep, yep. He was the one that, you know, he shows the videos of like how much a deer will drop if the head's down or if it's up, and you know, all kinds of just great stuff he's putting out there. But before we get into the show, let's talk about some sponsors real quick.
Let's do it.
Athlon Optics, ridiculously good optics.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Nathan, he sighted his in today.
Yeah. By the way, we're recording this a couple weeks before it's going to come out. So we are recording the show the Thursday before youth season opens up here in Missouri.
Just give you guys a little reference.
So like Micah said, I took my my Six Creed out today and sighted it in. It's not how I wanted to do it, but it's been raining its ass off here all week and been windy. So I ended up going to a indoor range that has a 50-yard rifle range and sighted it in so that it in theory, it should be good at 200, you know. There's a lot of theory out there that at 50 and 200 are basically the same plane for a lot of rifle rounds. And so
usually a lot of people will do 50 and then they just fine tune at 200.
Right.
So you should be close.
Yeah. And everything the boys are going to be shooting this weekend is going to be within 150. So, I actually went out in the rain this morning and set up blind and, then went and sighted the rifle in after, lunch before I did something for work. So kind of worked out pretty good. Didn't exactly go the way I wanted it to. I wanted to go to a buddy's house that has a really cool new rifle setup, but it just rained all morning and then it was windy. So, but that Midas did real nice. Real nice.
Oh, yeah. 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 We love our Athlon stuff. Weber Outfitters, if you guys are in the Hawk Point area or driving by that area, stop in, say hey. You know, they're good people. If you need some bow work done or looking to buy a new bow or rifle or shotgun or whatever your outdoor needs are, they pretty much have you covered there.
And when you stop in, make sure you give them a hard time. You know?
Yeah.
Be a bitch.
Especially to Josh.
Yes.
Josh, yeah. Just give Josh.
Treat Josh like absolute shit. Okay? It's imperative that you do it. Just kidding, Josh.
Love you. All right. Onyx. Use the code MWW20 for 20% off. Everybody's using Onyx. It's probably the number one hunting app out there, I would assume.
There's no problem.
So hopefully you guys got the...
No probably.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It's awesome.
I used it multiple times today.
Yep.
Sometimes, do you ever find yourself just bored and then you get on your Onyx?
Dude, there's been multiple times where I've gotten on there, like you said, bored, just checking stuff out. And I have found like owners of stuff that I'm like, hey, I kind of know those people. Or, oh, I didn't know they had property over here. You know,
right.
I found like two coyote hunt spots. That's how I found them. I was like, oh, I didn't realize you guys bought 40 acres over here. Can I coyote? Oh, yeah, go for it.
When we were recording with Grant, I got on my Onyx when he was talking about food after the crops come out. And I'm like, where are they going? Where you and I are hunting together, where are they going? I'm going to find it. And so he's sitting there talking, and I'm on my Onyx looking at a map. You know, it's just so easy to use. Check them out, onyxmaps.com. Huntworth Gear, use our code MWW15 for 15% off, but I don't remember when it's ending. There's a flash sale going on. So discounted prices.
Yeah, it might be over.
Plus more off. It's a heck of a savings.
It was really good savings, but it might be over by the time they hear this.
It's very possible. I don't do dates very good, but man, I've been wearing my Huntworth Gear, dude. It's, I mean, that's all I wear anymore hunting. That's what I'm going to wear this weekend with the boys. The boys actually have Huntworth jackets that I got for them. They're actually not kid sizes. They're women's sizes that fit them. And they're going to have them on with their orange.
Dude, we're going to have to break out the mid-season stuff for Sunday.
It's going
to
be cold.
Sunday is supposed like a high of like 42 or something like that, if I remember right. It was 40s, so it's going to be chilly. I think a lot of deer are going to die this weekend, man. It's shaping up to be a really good deer moving type weekend.
I hope 3 deer between the two of us die this weekend.
Oh, yeah. I hope so, too, man.
Because that'd be so. Chase and Caden both getting one, and then Brindley. All 3 of them. That'd be great. That'd be great. Yep, and now after talking to Dr. Grant Woods, I kind of want the boys to shoot a doe. Both of them. You know, I had a talk with both of the boys this morning. And I said, I asked them, what do you want to shoot? You know, we need to talk about what we're going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit the shooter to my right, and the kid who's not shooting is going to be to my left, because the deer should be on our right. And every 30 minutes, I'm going to have you boys switch. That's how we're going to do it. And I said,
were they good with that?
Yeah. I said, but what do you guys want to shoot? Because, you know, if Chase wants to shoot a doe or Caden, then, you know, that could change who's up based on what comes out. And they both decided they want to shoot a buck. And I can understand that, obviously.
Sure.
But part of me wonders, like, am I ruining these boys? You know, Chase shot a doe last year. You know, technically it wasn't, but we all thought it was a doe. It was a button buck. And the only thing Caden's ever killed is a buck. Am I ruining these boys by not making them shoot does?
I don't think you should make them do anything. And we talk about this at the very end of the show. Make it fun. I think they say they want to shoot a buck. I think if a doe pops out, one of them's going to break and be like, can I shoot it?
I can talk them into it, is what you're saying. Yeah, I'd be like, dude.
You could try to talk them into it.
That's a big doe.
But
it's a big doe, bro.
I think it'll happen naturally. I think they'll be like, Dad, one of them is going to be like, Dad, can I shoot that one? I'll shoot that one.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't pressure too much.
Yeah. I don't remember who we were on. I think we were on Huntworth Gear. Alps Outdoors uses the code 2023 Woods Water for 30% off. Set up the freaking blind from them. And so did you. Well, I don't think you set yours up yet. Oh, you did?
Yeah, nice. I set mine up tonight. Amy took the two oldest, and they had tutoring tonight. And so me and the little one, we went out there, and we were able to set it up. I was hoping to get it set up, you know, a few days ago. But, you know, it is what it is. I got it set up.
Yeah.
And, it went smooth, man. So besides my daughter stepping in mud and ruining her new shoes, pretty much,
everything went pretty good. Oh, you're going to get your ass beat by your Amy?
As soon as I got home, I washed them off as best I could, and I got them on the foot dryer. So I'm hoping she doesn't notice.
Yeah. My blind stinks because I put it up wet last time
Got
used, and it smells. So it's going to get sprayed with Scent Thief based on last week's show as we're getting into the blind Saturday morning. That's for sure. Although it doesn't smell like a human. It just smells like moldy-ass stuff, but...
I think we're like mine smells new, so because it's new.
Yeah,
my last one got trashed, so I got another one from Alps, and technically Browning, but so it smells like new. So I'm hoping. I think we're supposed to get some more rain tomorrow, so
that should wash some of that
wash some of it away, and then definitely gonna give it a coat of Scent Thief.
And then I'm gonna have 3 Alps chairs inside of it. One for me.
See, I only got 2 for the boys. Alps. Yeah. I guess I got 2. I got 2 Alps chairs, but I think Amy wants me to take Lawson with us, which that's going to be difficult. But, you know, I don't mind taking him, but he just doesn't do as good with the, you know, sitting still and being quiet thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I might try to just talk her into making it where it's just one night instead of both nights if we don't get something tomorrow.
Yep. I'm with you. Zamberland boots. So check them out. ZamberlandUSA.com.
Yeah. With all this rain going on, it's been awesome having my I've been wearing my Salates a lot for work, so feet been staying nice and dry, so that's nice.
Sweet. Check them out. Reveal cameras by Tacticam. We've gotten a few bucks on camera the last couple nights. Nothing huge, but it is maybe a good sign. Not where we want it to happen, but hey. It is happening, and the Reveal cameras are helping us with that. And Habitat Works, we talk about Dustin actually in this show with Dr. Grant Woods because Dustin is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to habitat, and Dr. Grant Woods talks about cedars and how much he hates them. So Dustin comes up, and that's because Dustin's the man. So give him a call. You can find his number on our website. Email him at habitatworksllc@gmail.com. And if you don't know how to get a hold of him after all those possible avenues, get a hold of us. We'll let you know. Who else? Black Ovis, man. Talk to our boy, Craig, over at Black Ovis today. And I think our listeners, you know, we all three of us have gotten, what do you call them? Saddles this year to try out. And Black Ovis is a great place to go look for that stuff. You know, if you're trying to find some stuff. Oh, yeah. They carry Trophy Line, got a big shipment in recently. You know, so middle of the year, you're restocked. Trying to find some stuff. They're restocked. And then use our code MWW10 for 10% off when you order. Black Ovis, man, it's they've got a lot of stuff, and not a lot of people know who they are in this part of our world yet, the Midwest. So jump on the bandwagon now, and get that stuff out from Black Ovis. And then Camo Fire, same owners. Get on your app while you're hunting. I'm going to try to make that popular. Yeah. You know how, like, the working class, Doug from working class says delete your browser history? I'm going to say get on your app while you're hunting. Doesn't sound as fun, though, so I suck.
No, it's not as cool, but that's fine.
And that's it for the sponsors, man. We appreciate all of them.
That's it, man.
We appreciate all of them very much. And let's just hop into today's show with Dr. Grant Woods about all things doe management. This is...
And, of course, we go through a few rabbit holes.
Oh, obviously.
That's just part of it.
Obviously. Yeah, let's hop into it. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast.
Podcast.
Later.
Podcast. All righty. Welcome to the show, y'all. Today, I'm super excited about this guest. We have Dr. Grant Woods, and he's already told me just to call him Grant. But we really appreciate Grant coming on here. Grant, how are we doing tonight?
Man, doing great. And thanks for having me as your guest.
Absolutely. We've been, you know, big fans of everything that you do over there at Growing Deer TV. And so this is a real treat for us. Before we get kind of going, if there is anybody out there, do you think you could give us a rundown of your background and what you do and all things deer hunting?
Well, just a little stab here. I was raised in Missouri on a little farm, no deer. There were no hunting season in the county I was in, southern Missouri, the Ozarks. And I wish I could remember, but I heard at the barbershop somewhere they were going to restock deer in the area. And I was running my trap line. I thought I was a great big trapper. I had a little rabbit trap line, meadow scrap barnwood. And one morning it was cold in the winter, and I was checking my trap line, and I found a female fawn dead, one of our little fields. Poacher killed her. First deer I ever saw, poacher killed. So since that moment, I've been fascinated with deer and really a strong disregard for lawbreakers of any kind, but especially wildlife, you know, violation lawbreakers. And I personally believe at that moment, God said, hey, I want you to be a deer biologist and, you know, share what you learned about creation. Because I'm 62 and guys my age, I want to be in the Army or, you know, be a policeman, be a fireman. I just wanted, deer biologist wanted a term. I just wanted to work for deer and was just hard-headed enough to wiggle my way through, find a career, and ended up here somehow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, not the dead fawn part, but...
Yeah.
Now, the story.
Yeah. One thing we do like to ask all our Missouri residents, what is it about Missouri that you love the most? Like, you know, everybody's got what they say. They all kind of say the same thing, but I'm going to let you answer. What's your favorite thing about the Missouri outdoors?
Oh, gosh. About Missouri outdoors, it's got to be the diversity. You know, you go from the plains, literally the prairie up north that's now ag, but it was prairie, to I'm in the Ozark Mountains, to the Missouri River and Mississippi River. It's a very diverse state, and I think it's really good people. I'm blessed or cursed to work all over. Daniel's just up in Canada, and we've worked in New Zealand, and I think we've been to 50 some odd different landowners this year, from Ontario to Texas to Florida on back up. So Missouri has really good people in it, and all the diversity, and it's just a – I've raised two children here, a great place to raise kids from the wildlife. I want to say this, and I say it very openly. I think we're really blessed with NBC. I don't work for NBC at all. I'm private. I don't think people appreciate NBC because they're not in all the other states like I am. And Missouri Department of Conservation does a very good job. I don't agree with every decision they make. I'll say that to them. But overall, I give them an A. And working with some other state agencies, I give MDC an A.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, you know, we're just a couple hours north of you. And you and us are in two different worlds.
Oh, yes.
And we're in the same state, you know. And that's what I think is so cool about our state. You know, a lot of states don't have that. You know, if you're in Kansas, you're pretty much in Kansas. Although Kansas has some pretty cool stuff. A lot of people think Kansas is boring. I actually think it's pretty damn cool. You know, you got some diverse stuff there. But, you know, Iowa's Iowa. You know, Missouri seems like it's just this convergence of a bunch of states that just all kind of like stopped together.
The states that have irregular borders tend to be that way. And the states that have square borders were easy to survey out, and there were prairies. I'll throw in just a little trivia for you. You know, so we probably all hunters probably know sections a square mile, but as you go further west, sections get larger and larger, literally, because of course they didn't have GPS. They were measuring with chains, steel or iron chains that were 66 links long. And as those survey crews moved west, those chains wore a little bit between links. And they wore enough that when you repull it to get a mile going up mountains, down mountains, across rivers, whatever, they wore. And when you get a section, there's sections in Nevada. I used to work in Nevada for the Bureau of Land Management on mule deer. There's sections in Nevada that, you know, way over 700 acres. So just a little trivia there for you that in our modern world of GPS and whatnot, we don't even think that's possible, but it's real.
Say you learn something new every day. I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Hey, let's say one other thing while we're just talking about the difference. Let's just go ahead and kill the genetics myth right now. So, you know, you got those great big deer like on your wall behind you or up in northern Missouri. Well, about 95% of those deer were stocked up there from right on the Arkansas-Missouri border, three wildlife refuges down here. Here in Taney County, we got Drury Mincy and then Caney Mountain, and then Peck Ranch. That was the big stocking source for all of Missouri.
Was it really?
Little puny Ozark deer. And they got north, exact same genetics, and got groceries. Got to where a lot of sun was hitting the ground, and a couple of generations grew big. It's almost always groceries, and it's almost never genetics. So it's just and that's been replicated in many states over and over and over. And then now all kinds of genetic research, the deer genomes have been mapped out. So let's just kill that myth and get out of the way.
Well,
it's not genetics, folks. We got good genetics where we hunt. Those genetics are really good over there in that soybean field. Well, yeah.
Because they're eating protein.
So let's just kill that one right now.
Who was it that we had on that for NDA that said that? I mean, they said it's habitat and food before genetics.
Yeah. Habitat, food, time.
Yeah, his name's going to hit me as soon as we stop recording. But we had somebody on with National Deer Association. Goodness gracious, Lindsey Thomas Jr. I just don't remember if it was Lindsey, because we've had several people on with the National Deer Association that basically have said the same thing.
A lot of stuff like that. Yeah.
But we're not talking about bucks tonight, are we?
No, we aren't talking about bucks. But the main reason we wanted to have you on tonight was doe management, and everybody has their own different views, opinions on doe management in itself. I have close friends of mine that I've hunted with for a very long time that refuse to kill does. They refuse it. And then I have some that let's kill all the does, and they're big meat hunters. And, you know, if it's brown, it's down. So from your experience, and obviously it's going to be different from where you hunt. If you have, what you have available to you. But what is the proper way to manage your does, in your opinion?
Yeah, great question. And I'll be a little bold here. This is not opinion. This is just science from me and a lot of researchers. So let's, again, clear that out of the way, not trying to be mean at all, but so there's a statement I read in one of my really early wildlife management textbooks that has resonated with me still to today, that says techniques change, but principles never change. Techniques change. Air hammer versus a 16 or, you know, 28 ounce spike hammer. Techniques change, but principles never change. Still got to drive the nail in the tube before. The tools we use to do it may be different. Deer management has never changed. The techniques we use from a stone tip to a, you know, a 30-06 or whatever has changed. So doe harvest ideally is used to make sure there's plenty of groceries for all deer in the herd to get all the way through the winter in good health. It's a number of mouths thing. It's not an opinion. It's how much food's on the landscape. And then when you get to where there's just tons of food, then it's social carrying capacity. How much crop damage can the farmer tolerate and still make a profit? How many roadkill people? Sounds so harsh. Because deer is the most dangerous animal in North America. More than, you know, rattlesnakes and grizzly bears and lost ball combined because of deer car accidents. So we first should look at the health of the deer herd in most areas. Is there enough groceries for the amount of deer there? And second, what's the social carrying capacity? How are they impacting humans and human goals for that area? So if you're in total closed canopy, Mark Twain, Hercules Glades, not much opening, whatever, it's probably somewhat self-regulating. There's just not enough groceries for those does to be very productive. And if you're in ag country and you don't have a doe harvest, they absolutely will exceed social carrying capacity probably before they exceed biological carrying capacity. And biological carrying capacity is not a point, it's a range. I mean, so, you know, do we want to grow big deer? I know we're not talking about bucks. Then we're probably going to have fewer deer, so there's ample groceries. Do we want medium health deer? Maybe we're okay with those just having one fawn apiece. Then we can have more deer because they're not going to be healthy enough to probably carry twins. So the state or the private landowner picks a point on that management continuum from starving to death, you know, way too many deer to one deer per square mile. And you pick that point on the continuum and you adjust the doe harvest to meet those objectives. That sounds complicated, but it's not. And in general state management, they manage like, you know, deer management zones or, you know, zones like Missouri has, and other states have even smaller zones down to counties or whatever. And you say, boy, in this area, our farmers are screaming about crop damage or the roadkill numbers are really high. Or, boy, our hunter success was really low last year. We need to let that deer population build up a little bit because deer herd reproduction is totally controlled by does. One buck can breed a lot of does. We're not adjusting population by buck harvest. That's an excuse or, you know, that thing's got antlers, I'm going to shoot it type story. But right. We control deer population by doe harvest. And you know, through Missouri's history here, we've pretty much been a one buck in gun season and then one or two in bow season if you don't take one in gun season for decades. But that doe quota has been up and down a bunch. Did we have a really bad EHD outbreak in an area? Boy, we need to back off that doe harvest a little bit or, you know, whatever it is. So doe harvest, if we're doing real deer management, is a scientific tool. And let's take that one step farther. You hear a lot of hunters say, boy, my land or wherever I hunt, it's 10 does per buck or 25 does per buck, whatever. Well, that's a good story, but it's absolutely not true. So before the gun season, it's almost biologically impossible for that sex ratio to be more than one buck to 3.3 does. Because am I too scientific here? Y'all feel free to redo it.
No, this is great.
No.
Let's think of a deer herd as this pyramid. And the base of the pyramid, unless there's something really weird going on, is going to be fawns, right? There's more fawns than any other age class because they haven't had time to die yet,
mm-hmm.
right? Not many seven-year-olds, they've had a lot of opportunities to die. But fawns, depend on, you know, if you do it 2 minutes after birth, they haven't had a lot of time to die yet. And fawns are coming out, the sex ratio is almost always 50-50. We consider a fawn or fetal sex ratio of 48 to 52, about as far skewed as it gets. Well, that's the most deer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you harvested almost every single buck that is a year and a half old or older, the next spring with that huge fawn crop coming in at 50-50, it pulls it back to about one buck for every 3.3 does. So a lot of hunters talk about the adult, not the deer herd sex ratio, the adult sex ratio after in Missouri, you know, 150,000 bucks have been harvested. And you're looking out over a picked cornfield. Well, yeah, you may see a lot of antlerless deer. A lot of those are really big button bucks that you don't see through your optics at 400 yards close to dark, or short spikes. But sex ratios don't get to be 10 to 1. That's misinformed.
I mean, is there ever a time where it gets so skewed that it is that, or is it almost always going to scientifically be that pyramid and you can kill what you think is every buck out there, but as soon as there's a bumper crop of fawns the next year, it's going to pull that number right back to almost to 3.3.
That's fact. Go to bed knowing that's true. That's fact. We have a lot of evidences. These aren't just theories, guys. I'm a hands-on. If you can see my hands calloused, I'm a hands-on biologist. Pennsylvania didn't start doing what we commonly refer as quality deer management, letting bucks get older and harvesting up does till, I don't know, 10, 12, 14 years ago, something like that. Before that, 90% of their harvest would be bucks every year, year after year after year, decade after decade, literally. And they would kill a big percentage of the standing stock of bucks. They would kill a couple of two-year-olds, one or two three-year-olds statewide. Pennsylvania is a big state, guys, and mainly yearling bucks. They just slaughtered that standing crop of yearling bucks every year, every year. And the deer herd, biologically speaking, was okay. It wasn't growing big bucks. And hunters actually, hunters were so used to seeing all these deer and shooting the first buck they saw, I got my buck, I got my buck, that when the state started trying to encourage some doe harvest and passing up younger bucks, it was a major revolt. The deer ball just literally, I know him personally, literally wore a bulletproof vest because there was life threats on him all the time.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, literally. Wow.
So we have this data. One thing I find about hunters, we tend to live in our little county or, you know, southern Missouri or whatever. A lot of people don't know that, you know, the rut in South Florida, in the Everglades area of South Florida, boy, it peaks out about late January. The mosquitoes, and season opens August 1st. The mosquitoes are horrible. Season in coastal plains, South Carolina, 20-plus counties, opens August 15th. You can use dogs to chase them or corn to bait them. It doesn't close till January, and there's no limit. If you shoot 500 a day and you got the landlord tags in your pocket, have at it. So there's a whole lot of data out there that we can apply everywhere, not just what happened, you know, in our little area.
Sure. Well, so, and this is coming from my buddy that said he won't shoot a doe to save his life.
Yeah.
How does that affect, I know we weren't going to talk about bucks, but how does that affect the bucks and the rut? And, you know, because obviously a lot of us out there, we want to kill a big buck. I mean, that's, I do it for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is, you know, I like to harvest mature animal. So how does the number of does affect the buck side of things?
Great question. So it goes back to what we started talking about. There's a finite amount of groceries, even in Iowa, but that finite level is way closer to the ground. You get down here in the Ozarks or where a lot of the land's covered by timber, right? Because timber is not, we're kind of associate timber, good deer habitat, but it's not. The prairie, if I said, hey guys, man, I've really enjoyed this podcast. We work in every state that has whitetails. I got friends in every state that has whitetails. I really enjoyed y'all. You just pick a state and I'm going to line this out to hunt. Where would y'all want to go?
Iowa.
Iowa, probably. Yeah.
Iowa, Kansas. Yep. A prairie state where the sun's hitting the ground everywhere. Because to get down to the basics, it's all about sunshine, 0-3 feet off the ground. Growing antlers is not about protein. It's about carbon. Deer are about 70% carbon. You're about 70% carbon. You're about 70% carbon. I'm about 70% carbon. And I'm being a little facetious here, but it's really about photosynthesis. And if you remember your seventh grade biology, photosynthesis, C6, H12O6, started a formula right. six carbons off the bat. Well, when that photosynthesis is happening in an oak tree, you know, 40, 50, 70, 80 feet up in the air, there's nothing for deer to eat down there. And acorns are a small pulse, an unreliable pulse in a deer's diet. They're very unreliable. It's protein all summer, and that takes photosynthesis at 0 to 3 feet off the ground, basically. So everyone wants to go hunt in Iowa, Kansas, you know, Illinois, somewhere like that, but then they won't cut any trees on their own property. So doe harvest,
damn it,
to your
Grant.
Question specifically.
So every farmer that takes every tree off is actually correct. Son of a gun. You always hear your trees is often better. Yeah, we always hear that joke, you know, like I always give my father-in-law a hard time because he's like, oh, get rid of the trees, you know, get rid of the deer. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, absolutely all the cedars. If I could flip my finger and get rid of them all today, I'd be a happy guy. So there's only so much food, and if you have too many does, they're eating groceries. Deer consume, and these are round numbers, about 5% of their body weight a day. So 100-pound doe, 5 pounds of food a day. Now, remember, that water is passing through, is coming out as urine or part of feces, or they're respirating. So deer tend to need to eat about 17 pounds wet weight. You know, I'm talking about summer and ragweed's growing. Deer love ragweed or soybeans or whatever. They have to eat about 17 pounds as the plant's growing to actually get 5 pounds of dry weight.
Wow.
And there's always so much food out there.
I didn't realize how much that is.
Yeah. So here's when you really think about it. I challenge you and your listeners to do this. Get you a grocery store bag, brown paper sack, tub, whatever. You don't have to pick even stuff deer will eat. Go pick 17 pounds of just leaves. You'd be wore out. You have tennis elbow. You'd be wore out. Wore out. And deer aren't doing that. They're picking the best food they walk by. They're very selective feeders. If you think about a cow or a buffalo or even an elk, they have a big, wide muzzle. They eat grass. Grass grows everywhere. They're grass eaters. Deer don't have the right bacteria in their gut to digest the cellulose in grass. They're forb-eaters. They're broadleaf plant eaters. So they're much pickier. Long, narrow mouth, real narrow mouth. If you look at their structure, you go, man, that's a picky, that deer's got a picky diet, which they do. And buffalo, which weigh 2,000 pounds, a big adult male, they're not picky. If it's grass, they're putting it in their belly. So the more does we have on the landscape, there's just less food for the rest of the herd. It's not just bigger antlers. The other does aren't getting enough groceries, so they're not producing enough milk for their fawns, male or female fawns. So doe harvest, again, goes back to the health of the deer herd and making sure there's enough groceries. And then if you want better hunting from a rattling or a grunt call or scrape behavior, and I have published this. When I say published in scientific stuff, not, you know, Joe Bubba Deer Journal. If you can, and I've done this on several properties, like on our place this year, we're probably killed 20 does and 4 bucks. We do that year after year. My typical write-up for a lot of people I work for is harvest 5 does for every buck. We've done that for 11 years straight on a large property. Never ran out of deer, but the hunting sure was awesome. Hmm. If you dropped your grunt call and it squeaked a little bit, you'd get run over by 3 bucks.
Wow.
Wow. So what you just said made me think of a question. If there's not enough groceries, as you call it, for, you know, all the deer at a certain time, and let's say a doe has twin fawns. Which Mike and I had this happen this year. That's why I'm asking. Now, I don't know what exactly happened to the second fawn, but if there's not enough milk for her to produce for both fawns, will she pick one? I mean, do we have any, studies that says she will only give nutrition happens?
No. Both of them the studies actually show both of them will get weak and malnourished.
Hmm.
Coyote picked that other fawn off. You know, accidents happen, hit a barbed wire fence, whatever.
Right.
She did not select a fawn.
I always wondered that because, it's kind of like, if you had to pick between your two buddies, one of them's got to die. They don't think that way, but, me and Micah had set of twin fawns on a farm that we hunt, and one of them had a real bad ticks all around its eye, like so bad that I don't even know how the thing could see. And it was like that for a few weeks, and then that fawn stopped showing up on camera. And so we assumed it died. Yeah. But it made us think about, you know, the drought that we were having and, you know, the amount of food that they've got. And was that, you know, that thing didn't look...
the tick issue you talked about. So when there's less food and deer got to stick their head down the brambles more to find something to eat, they're going to get more ticks.
Hmm.
And the whole herd health, if we just take this doe harvest skin from the whole herd health, there's a real common thing. It's not used in Missouri much. Southern states do it a lot, called herd health checks. And they're typically harvest 5 or 10 does off a given property after the end of seasons. And besides body weight and all the obvious stuff they do, the deer don't have 4 stomachs like you hear. They have 1 stomach with 4 chambers. And in one of the chambers, a real common parasite, the large stomach worm, Homunculus contortus, for all you science folks out there listening, but the large stomach worm, and you can see with your naked eye a big adult, one of those worms that looked like a blonde hair or white hair, about 3 inches long. So we use a 10-power scope to see them, makes it easier. But you can see them with your naked eye. You know, you're sorting through horrible smelly stuff. It's something graduate students do. I don't do this anymore. That's what grad students are for. But anyway. And if we look in this, that chamber of the stomach, and we find, you know, 0, which never happens, to 500 of those worms, we say, boy, there's plenty of food out there. And if we find 500 to 1,500, this is a relative index, obviously, probably about enough food for the deer. They're not going to express their full potential. If we find over 1,500, boy, that doe harvest run is up. And the reason that's so accurate is because the life cycle of that parasite, of course, it goes in a deer, reproduces, comes out the back end, and then the young go up vegetation. Well, the closer to the ground deer eating, the more of those young they ingest. They're getting a heavier parasite load. Well, that's true for cattle and sheep and a lot of things. And if you're running too many cattle on your pasture, if you weren't vaccinating them, they would be in really bad shape. You drive by Missouri and, you know, half the fescue pastures are lip, what I call lip high. Cow can't get their lip in closer to ground to browse the grass off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true in a lot of deer habitat. And you walk out there, oh, that ain't my place, man. I got all these brown leaves. Deer don't eat dead brown leaves. And you know, all this green stuff out here, which is probably buckbrush or something deer don't eat at all. When we get to actually looking at plants deer eat, a lot of areas outside the ag area is very poor habitat because fire's been excluded. It's a closed canopy forest. There's a lot of issues. Or, and I'm just sharing this as an example, if you're at my place and we've cut hundreds of acres of cedars and use fire every year. I did a fire the other day because I knew this rain was coming in. I mean, I burn year round. I burn all the time. I burn when God burned. If it's dry enough, I burn.
Mm-hmm.
I call that the God burning plan, not trying to be sacrilegious at all. But because when we read, like here in Missouri, if you guys aren't familiar, there was, you know, we got Lewis and Clark and the Great Journal, but there was a gentleman that come through here, Schoolcroft, looking for lead deposits. And I like his book. It's about 88 pages long. Because he's right over here at Beaver Creek, you know, 15 miles of the crow flies from me. His observations was right here at my place. And he went through here when there were still Native Americans. He was dodging Native Americans looking for lead deposits. But he kept a journal like Lewis and Clark. And so we know exactly what this habitat looked like. And there was almost no cedar trees. And he never mentioned ticks. Can you imagine camping out for 80 days, including part of the summer in Missouri, and not writing about ticks?
That'd be great.
Have you ever read Lewis and Clark's journal? They don't talk about ticks. That's because there was so much big-scale fire. Fire is the best tool we have to get rid of ticks. And not burning our woods has allowed tick populations and other management things just to explode. People don't like to burn in the Northeast, and they got ticks like crazy. It's illegal to burn. You can't legally burn in New York. You can't burn your own land in New York. It's illegal.
Wow.
Why anyone would live in New York is beyond me. If you can't burn, you should not live there.
Me too. That is interesting. I mean, you don't hear about things like ticks in anything you read from back in the day, and that's
they weren't an issue.
We've got a good friend who is he has a degree from Missouri, University of Missouri, and habitat, or I can't remember exactly what the degree itself is, but he talks about the reason why cedars are what they are now is because historically fire controlled them, you know, and now nobody burns anymore. So now they're able to be invasive, which is what they are, and go do what they're going to do. So
super invasive. The state of Oklahoma, and they use satellite imagery to figure this. So it's not one farm or something, but they think they lose about 700 acres to cedars across that state a day.
Jeez, a day?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, that's, you know, a cedar here, cedar there, but they're comparing satellite images of the state from one year to the next and counting up how many acres were lost to cedars.
Right.
By the way, you listeners out there, especially in Missouri, but a lot of states, the NRCS, National Resource Conservation Service, again, I'm self-employed. I do not work for a government agency. Has a bunch of money right now for people to cost share removing cedars from their land because they are that invasive. And ticks need moisture and shade. They desiccate. They dry out really quickly. So when you cut those cedars and put some sun to the ground and burn and get those native species growing, that tick population is going to drop.
That'd be great.
I know I definitely plan on doing it. I plan on doing it this upcoming burning season. It's obviously wet right now, but because the ticks are just, it's just ridiculous. I hunt, I have 60 acres, half of it's alfalfa field that the farmer plants and the other half is timber. And I've gone in there, the few times I've gone in there this summer to do, you know, management things, clearing out brush and doing whatever I need to do. Hundreds of ticks. I've gotten, you know, those little baby ticks, seed ticks, people want to call them. They're just baby. Yeah, but they're babies is what they are. And walk through a few nests of those. That makes for a long evening trying to get all those off. So I can't wait to burn just to take care of the ticks alone.
I want you to burn, but so your listeners know, when you burn under a closed canopy forest, you're going to take away some tick habitat. You're going to remove that leaf litter, but you're not helping the deer. Because we got to get sunshine down to cause those good plants to grow.
And like we were talking about our buddy Dustin with Habitat Work. He's walked the property, and I definitely need to do that. I need to clear up a lot. It was an old pasture at one point. There's a lot of hedge trees, thorny locusts, and a lot of useless trees almost.
Like elms. So
a lot of cutting needs to get done. It needs a lot of work. So I'm just picking at it when I can, sort of thing.
It's really cool to see people who are educated in certain areas, like, you know, Grant with deer and Dustin with, well, and Habitat, sure. But Dustin, when we were walking through that property together, it's just amazing. He'll be like, yeah, that elm needs to go. There's a bur oak. Oh, there's this type of maple. And Mike and I are like, okay, cool. Yeah, like, would have never known what that tree was. And then he would tell us why this tree is not good, you know, why this tree needs to go, try to, you know, you get rid of all these trees to help this oak do a little better. It can, you know, get some more light around it and not get, you know, so choked up. And he was just, it's just interesting to see people who are really good at what they do what they do. And
it's fascinating for sure.
Yeah.
So by harvesting does, we can, if needed, provide more food for the rest of the herd. So 100-pound doe, 5 pounds a day, roughly about 2,000 pounds a year. 10 does, that's 20,000 more pounds available on the property. So which just brings us up, when should you harvest does?
That was going to be my next question.
Almost all hunters say, oh, I'm not harvesting them after the rut because, man, I got to have all that bait for my bucks out here. That's what they're thinking. If I could give hunters one tip to be a better hunter, you know, after putting GPS collars on deer and all the work I've been blessed to do and all the stuff, here's my one tip, folks, one tip to make you a better hunter. Stop thinking like a human. Start thinking like a deer. You'll be a better hunter tomorrow. Deer don't care anything about gunshots. My neighbor shot all the deer running through the bed. I work on military bases. DOD has to spend about 10% of their budget on at least something ecology related. Some of them like to deer hunt. Good for me because no one pays like the government. I've seen piles of deer 20 yards off the range while our America's best are shooting automatic weapons. They don't think a gun. We're human. We know what a gunshot is. Deer don't know. Oh, it's thundering. Boy, that's a lot of thunder over there today, mama. They don't think about gunshots like we do. You're thinking like a human, not you, but hunters, I did when I was young too. Hunters think like a human. If you had to survive every day, you would think much differently. If you were in the back mountains of Afghanistan right now, or on the line at Gaza and Israel, you would not be thinking like you're thinking right now.
Right.
It's true.
I mean,
that's how deer live every day.
Yeah, just to back you up, one of my customers, I deliver propane, so I, you know, I'm out in rural country, and one of my customers is a shooting range, and you know, it's a they go in. Well, I was in there the other day because it's getting close to rifle season, so everybody's sighting in their guns, and it's surrounded by crop. And I'm driving down the driveway, and there's six, I think it was five or six does just sitting there feeding, and there was probably six or seven guys out there just shooting. Shooting the rifles, getting everything going. They could care less. So
it's they could care less at all. It's whatever deer get conditioned to. Like, you know, in town, you see deer all over the golf course. There's city parks all day long because it's dangerous out there at night, man. There's meth heads shooting around and coyotes running all at night and stuff like that. It's safe during the day in most city parks anyway. So what? And then people always say, because, like, I want to park. I'm not lazy. I walk a lot. But I want to park my four-wheeler or my buggy at the base of the stand or tree. I don't want to walk a quarter mile in there because then I'm leaving my human – I'm respirating. I'm, you know, I'm doing all kinds of stuff. Deer hear buggies every day. The worst thing you can do is have your hunting property say, no one go there all summer. I hear this all the time. Man, no one – and then, you know, day before opening day, there's 50 buggies out there riding around checking stands and blinds. Well, that sends a signal to deer. It's not the buggy. It's that there's activity there hadn't been all summer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hunt conditioned deer. We're on our property working. Like I said, I was just doing fire, doing stuff almost every day out of the year. My wife's out there walking, like, honey, could you please not walk during the pre-rut? But, you know, she's out there with her lady friends walking around. The dog's running all over the place. Our deer are just used to it. I'm not saying they're easier to hunt, but, they, you know, they're just deer going to survive.
We got a guy we know. We've talked about this several times recently. It's come up several times for some reason. We've got a guy we know that all summer long, he feeds his deer, you know, whatever he feeds them. And he takes his side-by-side every time and leaves it running and then dumps the food and then leaves. And he says not 30 minutes later, there will be every big buck on that farm will be at that food site. And he said,
it's better than that. I'm anti-feeding. I'll, you know, say
sure,
anti-feeding.
Yeah.
We have too many diseases, folks, but for those feed Texas, whatever. In Texas, they feed so much, literally, they will hear, if you're in the same buggy or truck that they feed out of all the time, they'll be standing in the Sedero before you get there. It's like the ice cream truck pulls in the neighborhood, always playing real loud music, and the kid says, Mama, give me a dollar, I'm going to go get an ice cream. When the deer hear that, you know, old Dodge truck out there bringing the corn feeder around, there'll be turkeys, quail, deer, be javelinas, hogs, standing in the road waiting for the truck to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, being on African safari.
That's what he said when hunting season comes around. He obviously can't feed anymore in the state. He he still drives his side by side because the deer are associating that sound with food, and so
it's,
you know, he has apparently killed some great deer, maybe because of an actual sound he's making going in there instead of trying to be quiet and slipping in there and all that stuff, you know.
No doubt, it's like Pavlov's dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the same conditioning, if you remember from schooling sometime, excuse me, about Pavlov's dog. For those that never learned that in school, Pavlov was a German scientist, of course, over in Europe somewhere, and he fed dogs every day. I think it was at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for 60 days. On 61st day, he didn't feed them. And wanted to see if they, you know, how would their behavior be. Well, they bit the heck out. No, I'm teasing. They started salivating. He would always ring a bell and feed them, ring a bell and feed them, ring a bell and feed them. When he rang the bell, didn't feed them, that was a conditioned response. That's where the term come from, that study. And they started salivating. So you can, most hunters condition deer to avoid them, right? Well, I'm not going there to opening day. And then they go in there, well, of course, you know, I got something strange happening in my bedroom here. I'm going, I'm getting the heck out of here. So it's a conditioned response. And that's why the farmer drives his old truck around checking cows, whatever, and sees all the big bucks. You drive in there and they run like crazy because they're used to the farmer every day. They're used to that vehicle every day.
Actually, that first time I saw you, I don't know if we were talking, if we were recording when I said this, but I saw Grant in a seminar that he did a long time ago. And you were telling that if you're one of those people to go out there and dump corn, you know, whenever it's legal, take your shirt off, put that shirt right next to the corn pile, leave it. Next time you do it, do the same thing. And then that would condition the deer to be
okay
to associate your smell. associate your smell with food or something positive.
I mean, if you're on a big golf course, it's a big issue is the deer won't get off the fairway for you to play through, you know, because they're so used to humans.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Micah?
Yeah.
So you and I are about to go out, sweat our butts off.
Well, I think it's a little late in the game.
Next year.
So the ideal day to harvest doe, if you're going to, let's just say wherever you're hunting, whatever your goal, your management goal is 10 does, just for easy math. The ideal time to harvest those 10 does is the first day. The first day September 15th through Missouri. Because that's just less food they're going to consume. And everyone said, oh, the bucks are going to leave because, you know, you're like, well, I thought the party was here. There's no party here. I'm going to drive across town and go to party over there. You're thinking like a human. The research after research after research, state after state after state, people have put GPS collars on deer, and the data almost always come back saying there'll be a few bucks that roam all over, but 90% plus, I'm just throwing a number out, they're committed to their home range. You can't drive them out at home range. People, researchers in South Carolina have used dogs, trained deer dogs, to try to make deer leave their home range. They just circle. They're not leaving their home range. They don't know there's more does over there. They don't have the internet. They don't have the radio. They don't have an iPhone. That's a different universe to them. Now, what will happen is, you know, here's the does home range. Here's the bucks home range. They overlap 10%. Comes November, she's got that magic perfume on. They overlap on the corner home range. Well, he's following her home. GPS studies show this, and, you know, they're zigzag, do whatever, the does, you know, going all over. And when that date's over 24 to 36 hours later, wherever that buck is in her home range, get back on my camera here, it's a straight line back to his home range. Here go across golf courses, rivers, swimming pools. He's going back because he's scared. He was, you know, on a date and not thinking right, like a high school boy. And then all of a sudden he realizes this date's over and I got to go home. Because deer are most secure in their home range. They know the thermals. They know the threats. They know the coyote dens. They're not out. It's not the – and another thing drives me nuts because, again, people thinking like people instead of a deer. The old big buck isn't cruising the county doing most of the reproduction. Not true at all. Mature bucks rarely breed more than a year and a half old buck.
Micah,
now, really?
That gives me hope for our big boy that has been gone for like a month.
Yeah.
Remember, I've always said it can't be a bad thing that they are comfortable where you are. So, Grant, just to give you an idea, me and Micah have this buck that we would love to kill this year. And during the summertime, we saw him on our cameras every single day. I mean, every single day. And we haven't seen him since, well, September 1st, he disappeared for 2 weeks, and then he showed up on the 14th, and then one more time on the 27th, and then since then, we haven't had a single photo of him. And we're both sitting here going, well, he's gone. He went to a different range. But I've always thought in the back of my – he just is – following some does or doing something different in his range.
How big is the property? How big area did you have covered by cameras?
Only probably about 25% of the timber area, honestly. There's
I
more.
I mean, is that 10 acres or 200 acres?
What would you say, Micah, 40?
Yeah.
The timber itself's probably around that 30-40 mark. It's surrounded by – the majority of the property that we have permission to is mostly crop, but sure. There is about 30-40 acres of timber.
40 acres – and there's 640 acres in a square mile. If that deer's home range at that time of year is a square mile, you know, you're a real small part of his home range. So not being on a camera in 40 acres, just, you know, a crop is harvested or acorns start dropping over here, you know, whatever happened, that's just a little shift. He did not leave his home range. He left where you had cameras.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right.
We need to buy more cameras.
Makes sense.
I'm just kidding. We already got too many cameras already.
Yeah. So you know, your bucks are not going to leave because you harvested does. That there's tons and tons of data on this. And then when you're in gun season, people say, well, I'll fill my doe tag, you know, after I get my buck. The first thing I want to do Saturday morning, opening day of gun season in Missouri, is drop a doe right in front of me. Shoot her through both shoulders, drop her right there. About 25% of the big bucks I kill with a gun are when I've already killed a doe during that hunt, that set. Not 2 days before, and I don't ever want to get down and move the deer. I'm just putting human sin out there, because deer don't think of dead like humans do. If we're out there and we walk up on a dead human, you know, we're freaking out a little bit, most likely. I'm such a deer hunter. I go, well, I'll call cops later. I'm going on my stand. I'm teasing. But, no, we have all kind of videos, published videos on our channel of bucks coming in to dead does. They don't think about dead like we do. That's just a doe laying there. They're getting down to their antlers, try to make them stand up, do all kinds of stuff to them. So the best bait you're going to have is a fresh killed doe.
That's a good point.
Oh, wow.
See, now I'm thinking maybe I should have one of the boys drop a doe Saturday morning.
There you go.
First thing. Crack of daylight.
Not a bad
crack
idea.
Of daylight. And make sure it's a double shoulder shot so they're laying right there. You know, doesn't do any good if you shoot it and it runs off 300 yards where you can't see it. And all the bucks are going to be over there.
Yeah, that would not work out well.
One other question, and this is kind of, I guess, personal, just because that property that me and Nathan talked to that we both have permission onto, I've noticed a lot of where we have a lot of pictures of coyotes. Uh-huh. And I know that coyotes obviously kill deer.
Uh-huh.
We're getting pictures almost every night of coyotes. And we're not getting that many pictures of deer. What effect do coyotes, I know that they're part of the landscape and everything, and we do our part of managing it. Should we go ahead and go and manage those coyotes before, and that might help bring our deer back around, or is it just?
I doubt it's going to help bring the deer. I get pictures. I had one trail camera two nights ago. I had a raccoon, a bobcat, a coyote, and a bear all on the same trail camera, and seven deer. Wow. At different times.
So another
thing. They live out there with that all the time.
Yeah.
Now, I'm all for legally harvesting coyotes, but it's tough to make a difference. I trap intensely mm-hmm. on my properties. It's not so much the coyotes are spooking a deer moving, but they are tremendous fawn predators. There's research out South Carolina. This research right. is over a decade old. It's really cool, sophisticated. They put a vaginal implant transmitter. Just means they're putting something with a GPS sensor on it. Inside the doe before the rut, semen will just swim right by. It's your conceive. 200 days later, that's the gestation period for a white-tailed deer. 200 days later, that fawn will be born, and it will push that transmitter out of the birth canal. As soon as it changes from inside that doe, which is about 100 degrees, to outside, that big change in temperature sends a signal, and graduate students, are sent out there to find that fawn as quick as they can. Usually within 4 hours. It was a big research, big property. Bunches of deer, GPS, not like two or three. Bunches. Now, this is in South Carolina. The South does a whole lot more research on deer than Missouri ever thought about. South will do more research on deer in 1 year than we're doing 10. Damn. It's just a different study area. It's not a priority here. I'm not knocking. It's just a different priority. In that study, 70% of the fawns were dead.
Dang.
By coyotes.
Right, coyotes. Wow.
I'm not saying that's true everywhere. Coyotes sure. were new in South Carolina. They just finally moved there, and they were a novel predator. Deer didn't really know how to avoid them. Deer have been dodging coyotes in Missouri for longer than all of us have been.
Yeah.
But coyotes are big fawn predators. Bears in some areas are reported to kill up to 40% of the fawn crop. I don't think that's true in Missouri, but in some areas. There's a lot of things that wants to eat a 6-pound pink sandwich. That's yeah. about what a fawn
would
was.
You be more worried about the coyotes, like we just talked about, the same property Mike and I have been talking to you about every 3 to 5 days, we will also get pictures of dogs running through the property, domestic dogs. Do they cause more issues with deer than coyotes, or?
They can't. They certainly can.
See, that's what we've been saying to each other is those damn dogs are causing more problems than the coyotes do. What is it they do? Do they just do they harass?
Say again.
Do they just harass the deer more than they do kill things?
Oh, they kill deer. They kill deer. Sure. They bust a lot of turkey nest up. That's a bad thing.
Yeah, I know.
And unfortunately, in Missouri, it's illegal to appropriately deal with that.
I know.
But that is a very bad. I don't have respect for people that don't take. I have dog. My wife has a dog. Loves dogs. We have a dog. You know, blood trailing, antler finding. I've always been, my family always had dogs. I had cows when I was a kid, had a border collie, loved dogs. But I just didn't allow my dog to run willy-nilly,
yeah.
you know, on everyone else's property. That'd be like me running willy-nilly on their property. They wouldn't like that.
Yeah, we've kind of went back and forth on what we should do. I mean, because we don't want to rustle any feathers, since, you know, we've been given permission out there, and it, you know, we don't want to say, hey, can we go talk?
It is a crime in Missouri, so you know, unless you feel threatened, it's a crime.
No, we're not talking about killing the dogs. Definitely not. We're talking about going and talking to the, finding out where they're coming from and going and talking to the owner. But, you know, then we're like, well, we don't want to make them angry, and then they get angry at the farmer because these guys came to our house and yelled at us or whatever. And so we've left it alone. But then every time we see those pictures, we're like, dude, we've got to figure out where these dogs are coming from and say something.
I would say more than likely, given what you told me about the property, has there been crops harvested close to you, or the beans brown and the green down the road? Or
no, yeah, everything's been harvested.
Yep.
Even away from your property, is there one field that hadn't been harvested in the neighborhood or something?
Well, the crops that are around where we are at are pretty much the only crops in that area. So the farm we're on, and then there's a farm south to it, and then a farm in the exact connects to the one that we have permission on. That's the only crop. Everything else is in hay fields and timber to the west and south.
Yeah, but we're talking probably a section's worth. It's probably around 600 acres of crop, give or take.
Yeah. I would say, you know, deer move to acorns or something. Shifts in food are what usually cause deer to move.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's what we
Those
assume.
Those dogs have probably been running through their alone time.
Probably have. Still annoy the hell out of us every time we see it.
Oh, yeah, I understand. It's a form of trespassing that's bad.
What else you got, Micah?
Is there... Yeah, getting back to the doe management aspect, me not being a biologist or that smart, how can I go out into my property that I hunt and be able to tell if I have too many does?
Let's start real basic. Have you been harvesting does in the past?
Yes.
What'd you say, Mike? Yes. I think you cut out.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Like how many?
I usually kill one a year, and then the landowner, he's taken usually at least one a year, if not, and he every once in a while allows buddies, but probably on average, I would say there's probably 3 to 4 killed a year on the
property. Off that mile square area.
No, this is off of my 60 acres that I have permission. Okay. Obviously, it butts up to a bunch of other stuff, big timber. There's conservation ground real close by.
I mean, just give me a guess. How many deer, bucks, or does, whatever you think's been killed off the mile square each year? Just a rough guess.
A lot more than 3 or 4.
I would say it's pretty safe that there's probably 15 to 30 deer killed in that area a year.
30 would be a lot per mile. That'd be a lot.
Okay. And I mean, like I said, I only have permission for the 60 acres. I know that there are hunters around me, and there's also a conservation ground that butts up pretty close to where I know it's in that square mile range. So I don't know exactly. I see a car there every night. Whether they're killing something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so it's probably more, I guess you would probably 10 to 20 might be safer bet.
We don't know. Maybe. Okay, so we don't know. So, Sam,
yeah.
Crops growing around you, what are those crops? Is that a standard corn soybean rotation, or what's being grown around you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I alfalfa in my area, and then real close by is bean and corn.
Okay. So it sounds like you got plenty of groceries during the growing season. It's in the winter, like now after those crops have been harvested, when groceries are short. And if you still have alfalfa out there standing, they cut all the beans and corn, the deer are on the alfalfa.
Oh, yeah. Every night.
Yeah, that's a given. Because deer are slaves to their gut. When you've got a big rumen, you got to eat a lot. It's like me and ice cream, buddy. I got to have it. And, you know, deer got to eat. They just got to have it. So deer are slaves to their gut, and they're going where the food is. And more importantly than that, they're going to the food that they don't feel pressured, that they feel safe. You know, if there's the best food in the world, but there's five, Navy SEALs up there picking someone off to get close to it, or there's safe food down the road a mile, we're all walking down the road a mile because we know we're going to die if we go there. And deer condition to danger very rapidly. So if there's a farmer that doesn't allow any hunting and he's got food, that's where the deer are.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, but in your case, it sounds like the metric is how much food is there after the crops are harvested. And if there's not much, you probably need to harvest some does.
Okay.
And I think what would really help you, from what you're telling me here, and again, I have not seen your property.
Sure.
Right.
From what you're telling me, I would be killing some trees and at minimum making a couple of hidey-ho food plots on the highest piece of ground, because higher ground, the wind doesn't swirl as much. When you get down low, your scent's going to swirl a lot more. I would have me a hidey-ho food plot on that high ground. So when the crops are harvested, deer are coming out of a hidey-ho food plot. That would be a very successful technique for you.
Okay.
And the last part of that is to approach hunt next without alerting deer. Because remember, the most important thing to a deer is survival. We know that by measuring corticosteroids. That's the fight or flight hormone.
Okay.
Or steroid, actually. But anyway, so if that gets really elevated in the blood system, they're scared. You know, this is something that can be monitored. You put a little tiger urine in the pen, take a blood sample, a lot of things we can do. But sounds to me like, man, when those crops get harvested, you put you a hidey-ho food plot close to a bedding area in that timber. You got to have sunshine to grow a hidey-ho food plot, kill, you know, four or five hedge trees, drag the brush out of the way, something like that. Mm-hmm. Put you a hidey-ho food plot, you're going to see deer. And make two or three so you can approach whatever wind it is that day.
That's not a bad.
No, I mean, that makes sense.
People make all the, you know, they're going to make a hidey-ho food plot and they're going to put up one stand or blind or whatever. Well, that's good for one wind direction. If I'm going to go to the trouble of making a food plot, I've usually got two stands or two blinds or something around it so I can hunt that under multiple winds.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I do have in the timber, there was an opening. I did a little bit of work to it, and I made it a little bit bigger. I put a clover plot. Yeah. Put a clover plot in there, and then my plan next year, there's another opening. It's a little bigger, and it's kind of like an L-shape type deal, and I plan on clearing it out a little better and putting in another some type of food plot. So that would definitely help for sure.
Yeah.
But it does sound like I need to kill some more does.
Yeah. And I think we could do the same thing, Micah, at the property you and I have together. You know, I think, you know, depending on if we are able to, putting food where they were all summer, but when those beans, leaves fall off, corn goes away, that food source is now gone. He's somewhere else eating somewhere else in his range. So, you know, if we can do something to keep those deer there, might help us out, you know, moving forward too.
With the landowner's permission, only if you get permission from landowner,
yeah.
When those bean leaves start turning yellow, just get you know, some cereal rye or whatever you want to plant and walk down the rows of the beans and broadcast some seed on the edge by the timber of that field. It's not going to hurt the beans. Once the leaves turn brown or, you know, start turning, they're done.
They're
just waiting for the beans to dry. And you can make a food plot right there in that ag field. It's probably going to be bare all winter.
Yeah.
But you need permission from the farmer first. If he's going to burn it down or give it a herbicide treatment in spring, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It's going to be weeds or your food plot crop out there.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to make a food plot. Not as easy in the cornfield, but in a bean field, it's very easy because you can spread the seed. The combine header heads are so wide, they're just going down two tracks. The header's not going to cut your food plot crop.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make – and soybeans are legumes or nitrogen fixers, so your food plot crop's going to grow. And, you know, if there's a pinch point or, you know, a point sticking out or somewhere you think, boy, deer always go by here, I wish I had a way to stop them, you can just spread some seed on top of the beans once they start turning yellow. Because once they start turning yellow, enough sun is going through there to allow your crop to grow. If you do it when there's a big full green canopy, those green leaves are built to capture sunshine. They're very efficient at that. So you're not going to get enough sun down there for your crop to grow very well. But once they start wilting and turning colors, there'll be enough sun down there for your crop to grow.
Not a bad idea at all.
No, we're going to have to make a phone call after this.
Yeah. For next year. Yeah, we got all these ideas now. What else you got, Micah? I tell you what, I feel like I've learned a lot.
I can't think of any other questions off the top of my head. Is there anything that we missed as far as doe management that, you know, would be some good information?
I don't think so. Last thing I'll say is you can learn a lot just by keeping a simple log of the whole deer, what's called live weight, but they're dead by the time you're weighing them, but whole deer weight of your does. And, you know, I don't take it for all the fawns. I take it for all the mature deer, 2.5 years old or older. You know what you call a big doe. And if it's going down, you know you're got too many food, you know, year compared year to year. And not just one doe. You got a decent sample size. But if it's going down, you need to harvest more does. If it's going up, you got more food than you got deer, and you can back off your doe harvest a little bit. That simple indicator, if the sample size is big enough, is very accurate. Doe body weights don't lie. And hopefully you're killing way more does than bucks. So I don't really care about buck body weights. That's a small sample size. I care about mature doe body weights.
Makes sense.
No, I like that. Yeah, my we took my nephew for that doe management hunt that they had a few weeks ago, and I thought the doe was huge. It dressed at, I think, 125. So I thought that's like one of the bigger does I've seen in a long time.
That's a big doe. You could add about 30%, give or take, if you leave the heart in or out, you know, all these things, different ways people gut or eviscerate deer. But that's a big doe. That's a big doe.
Yep. Yep. So that might mean that, because I was at our other buddy Andy's property, he wanted to kill some does. So he's like, come out here, take some does. So we got one, and well, I might need to tell him, hey, man, you might need to watch it. It seems like your does are pretty fat and happy.
No. If that's ag country, they're going to be big.
Yeah. Right. He's our buddy. He's our buddy that freaks out about shooting a doe after the rut because he could be killing the next 200-inch deer. He's that buddy.
Yeah.
He's funny.
Yeah. That doesn't work either. Yeah. My testimony is clear in that little farms, you know, early antler season. I harvested 3, and I had some guests here too. I wasn't messing around. I would have got more if I could have. So, yeah.
Awesome.
I'm very serious about that.
Hopefully my daughter will be able to put an arrow through one this coming weekend with it being youth season. So
yeah.
We're taking the crossbow out and we're going to sit and hopefully get something in front of us.
Hey, you know what? Last thing I'll say here, it's okay to you guys. I mean, I've raised 2 daughters. I would keep it fun. Here's a couple of hints, Dad. Don't take M&Ms because kids, especially girls, tend to eat one M&M time, so they're always rattling the paper. Take a Snickers bar, so they take one bite, they're chewing for a long time, not rattling the paper.
All right. Yeah. Snickers bar. I'll write that one down.
Yeah, yeah. And I let my kids still today, although they're pickier now than I am. They kill bigger bucks than I do too, but they're pickier than I am. But I raised my daughters. They didn't have to hunt at all, even though Dad's a deer biologist. They could shoot anything. My daughter's first deer was button buck, and I always want to keep it fun. If they were cold, we went home. If Missouri, in their bad wisdom, puts youth season on Halloween weekend, making kids make a choice between candy and deer hunting, it may be great for deer hunting, but it's not good for kids to make that choice.
Right.
So, you know, we want to make it fun. And like I say, if it was cold or, you know, I just hunted when they wanted to hunt and made it really fun, never put any guardrails on them except safety. And now they come back. One of my daughters works for SpaceX in Seattle, and she's flying home to deer hunt. So
that's awesome.
That make is it fun, awesome. And they want to come hunt with you.
Yep. That's my plan this weekend.
Yep. For sure. So
good plan.
Well, Dr. Grant, we really appreciate you coming on and joining us for this very informative podcast. You know, we'd love to get some information out to our listeners that hopefully, you know, people start killing does that need to kill does and lay off the ones that don't.
Yeah. Good. I appreciate y'all having me as your guest. It's a great honor. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, sir.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.